couple of tweets I want to read about some of the stuff we've been talking about. Brett says, yes, more WWE coverage. Jake says he'll take care of that for you. Grandpa Kev says, my son lives in Vegas. WNBA Indiana is expected to draft Caitlin Clark. He said he looked for Ace home games. You usually get tickets around $7, but versus Indiana, starting price is now $67. So there you go. And D Wags would like Jake to know that WrestleMania started with two nights in 2020.
So I just saw that.
Other than that,
yeah, you know,
he nailed it. But hey,
Jake was living in the mountains for
most
of the time.
That's all right, though. You don't have to worry about that.
COVID got me.
We have our next guest in studio. We have former Major League pitcher Scott Carroll, who, oddly enough, is coming to talk about WrestleMania. Scott, good morning. How are you?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me in.
Hey, thanks for coming in here. We appreciate it. It's been a while since I think Brett Saberhagen's event last year where I saw you?
For sure.
That's right. That's awesome, man. And you finally had a chance to meet Nate in person. Did that live up to your expectations?
And more.
Yeah.
You see how excited he was when he came into the studio.
And so we got lots of stuff to talk about with you. And obviously, for people that have followed your career, you're a Liberty native. You live about close to here now. But you pitched for the White Sox.
Yes.
And you just saw the Royals with a four-game sweep of the White Sox. And it appears two baseball teams that are in very different spots right now. But like I said earlier, man, it doesn't matter if it's a bad baseball team. It's hard to get a four-game sweep. It's hard to win games against teams you should beat sometimes. Look at the Tigers. They just lost two out of three to the Oakland A's.
No doubt.
And so that's a big deal for the Royals to win four in a row, get a four-game sweep, and now put themselves two games above 500.
Yeah, it's great momentum, especially with the two teams coming in town. And like you said, these are games that you want to win and are technically supposed to win, but it is tough to win every day in the big leagues. But to have that four-game sweep is such great confidence builders for these guys, and to get above 500 and have some really good momentum and doing all the things that you want to see in good competitive teams, pitching it well, hitting it well, keeping games close, and just really coming out on top, it's been really fun to watch.
God, this starting pitching has been so good. And Marsh did not get to five innings yesterday. He gave up three runs. He didn't get rocked. You know, he kept him in the game. And then the bullpen pitched four and a third scoreless innings. But, I mean, what's your reaction been to the marvelous starting pitching we've seen so far from the Royals?
It's been incredible. I mean, it's so fun from a pitching standpoint to watch and see how productive they've been and how competitive and how much they've just taken the reins of being kind of the leaders for the team and said, hey, we're gonna establish what this team's going to look like by having great starting pitching, and you'll pick us up when we need it. But that team is gelling together because of the starting staff. The team, the starting five is really, you know, bonding together and trying to figure out what they can do together to be a great starting staff. And, I mean, when you can consistently do that, and time will tell how long that'll last. But, you know, the ERA where it's at, it's incredible to start the season that way, and then it'll give them a really good chance this week against, you know, two good ball clubs coming into town.
Yeah, that club that's coming to town, Houston, they're supposed to be great, and they probably will be, but they're 3-7 right now.
Right.
Is there anything to, like, the timing of when you get to play teams? You know what I mean? Is it like, hey, let's play them now while they're not in a good stretch?
Absolutely. I mean, I was texting with just Jake and just about how, like, you know, it's great timing to have the White Sox coming to town because you handle business and you beat up on a team like that because, you know, they're worse. We thought the Royals were kind of, you know, crappy last year. The White Sox are even worse this year than the Royals were last year. So it is really good timing to have certain teams come into town like that because you can build confidence. You can actually, you know, just establish some really good momentum, and then you're geared up and ready for the really good teams when you're playing good baseball.
So I don't know. I mean, since you played for them, how much you pay attention to the White Sox? But they're a lot of former Royals over there. Chris Getz, GM, Pedro Grifol, manager. We talked about some other guys on the staff and some other players. But it's just they're in a weird place right now. Like what's right. Going on with the White Sox?
I was talking to my brother about that yesterday. They're trying to revamp obviously their whole system and try and get back on track after, you know, riding the wave of Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams for a long time. And I'm not really sure because they're trying to establish a new kind of regime, but it's going to take time for sure. And they don't really have the answers right now, but I think that what they're trying to build off of is maybe try to use the system that the Royals did, you know, 10, 12 years ago to try and get back on top.
It'll be interesting to see, but they're definitely in rebuilding mode. But that's good for the Royals. And, again, you have to take advantage of it, too. And the Royals did with the four-game sweep, and now they're 6-4 in a battle with you know, Detroit. They look like they're much improved with their pitching, but they just lost a couple to the A's. Cleveland is always good. Minnesota's got talent. But Cleveland just lost Shane Bieber for the year to Tommy John surgery. And so this leads into a question that I was really looking forward to asking you, to talking to you about. This I don't know if you saw this statement that was released from the Major League Baseball Players Association.
Yep, I read it.
And so, boy, there's a lot here. And then, you know, MLB fires back. And this is all about what's going on right now with the dramatic number of pitchers being injured. And so MLB and the Players Union are trading blame for pitcher injuries after the MLBPA condemned the pitch clock. And the league is pointing the finger at velocity. And so Tony Clark, the chief of the MLB Players Association, issued a statement Saturday. I'll just read some of this. Despite unanimous player opposition and significant concerns regarding health and safety, the commissioner's office reduced the length of the pitch clock last December, just one season removed from opposing the most significant rule change in decades. Since then, our concerns about the health impacts of reduced recovery time have only intensified. The league's unwillingness thus far to acknowledge or study the effects of these profound changes is an unprecedented threat to our game and its most valuable asset, the players. So then Major League Baseball released their own statement and pushes back, and they say, this statement ignores the empirical evidence and much more significant long-term trend over multiple decades of velocity and spin increases that are highly correlated with arm injuries. Nobody wants to see pitchers get hurt in the game, which is why MLB is currently undergoing a significant comprehensive research study into the causes of this long-term increase, interviewing prominent medical experts across baseball. To date, it's been consistent with an independent analysis by Johns Hopkins University that found no evidence to support that the introduction of the pitch clock has increased injuries. JHU found no evidence that pitchers who worked quickly in 2023 were more likely to sustain an injury than those who worked less quickly on average. JHU also found no evidence that pitchers who sped up their pace were more likely to sustain an injury than those who did not. So here we go. Major League Baseball Players Association against MLB, each pointing fingers at different reasons. You pitched in the major leagues. And maybe it's not just one thing. It's a combination of all these things. Right. So what do you think when you see this pissing match between the Players Association and baseball?
Yeah, there's a lot there, for sure. There's a lot to unpack. And it's I think there's – first off, so Tony Clark's taking the side, and that's his job, and he's going to represent the players to the best of his ability and say, listen, you know, there was a pitch clock reduction, which we agreed to, but then to just lower it even more, you know, right after that kind of is a quick kind of change, even though it – technically helps pace of play. So you have that element. And at the same time, you know, you have just the actually MLB saying, you know, there's just the velocities is the reason and now a spin, but they also benefit from the high velocity. So like baseball has gone towards such a peaking level of just high velocities, high spin rates, far home runs, all these things that they're benefiting from. But at the same time, they're saying that, oh, because of this, That should be the correlation directly to why these pitchers are getting injured. So there's a lot to unpack, but I think it's a combination of both. Like velocities have become such a huge thing within the game that you only get, you know, 10, 15 seconds in between each pitch, you know, and your body starts to get tightened up. There's a lot of risk for injury there, clearly. So there was always been pitchers getting hurt throughout the course of baseball, but now it's escalated to a level because of, I think, of the rate in which pitchers are being thrown on the pitch clock, but also the velocities at which they're being thrown. And I think it is, I was texting this exact same article to friends yesterday, just talking about how this is something that's going to be, it's kind of a major issue. It's an underlying issue with the game of baseball. And it sucks because baseball is trying to hit a level as far as more popularity and keeping the game and going in the right direction. You kind of just always have these setbacks, right? you know, you have just the little things that will come up that they just keep the game from actually growing and being, you know, the great game that it can be. And so it just sucks because it's detrimental to the overall game. And so I'm not a doctor, obviously, but there's a lot of things that go into it. And there's health and fitness and spin rates and velocity and the pitch clock. Those are all tied together for sure.
So Spencer Strider, the awesome ace of the Braves, he has a UCL injury. So they're waiting to find out exactly how bad that is. Bieber is out now. And CBS Sports Senior Research Editor Doug Clausen put together this list. So if you judge it by ERA with a minimum of 40 starts since 2021, 8 of the top 10 starting pitchers in baseball are either on the injured list or on a rehab assignment. Justin Verlander, Brandon Woodruff, Clayton Kershaw, Drew Rasmussen, Max Scherzer, Otani, Bueller, Burns, McClanahan. And then you have the guys that got hurt over the weekend. And also, per his research, 20 of the top 35 pitchers in multi-year ERA are sidelined, including 12 of the top 20. There's something there, right? But, I mean, it just might be, and you're having these dueling statements blaming each other, but it might be just a combination of everything. So, like, with the pitch clock, explain to people that've never pitched and don't get this why that would be detrimental, or what the players, what their argument is, why this could be leading to injury.
Well, so when you're, you know, throwing a baseball over your head is natural. It's not natural. It's an uncommon and unnatural thing to do, and it could be a cause for injury. But when you're trying to pitch at a certain velocity and you're trying to you know, get the most out of your efforts and throw the ball, you know, extremely hard and create torque and spin and all this stuff, and then you're asked to do that on a shorter clock. So now you kind of come into the fatigue factor and also mindset. What's kind of cool is Buddy Biancolana, former Royal player.
Yeah.
He does a lot with the mind, the body-mind connection, and it's pretty cool. I've talked to him about this, and he still works with players, and about how, you know, if your mind is kind of in a position where it's not freed up to move naturally and allow yourself to just be more stress-free on the body, that's when you actually can create a lot of tension and a lot of injuries cause for that. So there's the mind-body connection still has a piece of that too. So now you're ramping up how much time players have in between each pitch to, you know, just clear their minds, get focused on the next pitch, and be able to do it without injury or cause for injury. So it's a little different than most sports, obviously. With football, you know, you have a game clock and then a play clock, which is similar to a pitch clock, but you're not trying to throw a ball as hard as you can every single pitch or create the most amount of spin. You know, you're either running or blocking or just trying to make a catch. So it's a little bit different. But, all the mechanics that come into play and the stress and fatigue within each pitch, that definitely is a factor.
We have Scott Carroll, former Major League starting pitcher, in studio. Nate Buchady.
I find the whole conversation really interesting because, as you said, this all comes down to the fact that they're trying to make baseball more popular again, or at least stem the tide of it decreasing in popularity with younger people and things like that. And, you know, there's all these different rule changes that happen, and it seems that baseball can be very resistant to those changes, right? One of the things I was thinking about was big conversation as the game evolved of the defensive shift coming into play. And I would always ask the former big leaguers we have, well, and Buster Olney, okay, well then, why don't hitters adjust and start hitting to all fields again? Because the big thought process with the hitting approach was, we're not even worried about hitting to the opposite field anymore. It's all about launch angle, you know, hit home runs, hit for power. And I thought, well, then once teams started shifting like crazy, why wouldn't you adjust back to it and start developing hitters that can hit to all fields? And instead, baseball was just like, no, we're just going to ban the shift. So nobody had to adjust. And now with this, like, we have Mike Boddicker in the studio all the time. Got through well over 200 innings over and over and over again. And the approach back in those days was, you're not trying to throw as hard as you can every single time. You're trying to pace yourself for 200 innings for the season, and you're trying to pace yourself so you get deep into games. That clearly is not the mindset in pitching at all anymore. It's about getting strikeouts, blowing guys away, keeping your ERA down, and all those other numbers. But the result clearly is also guys get hurt, they can't pitch as many innings and all that. There's not going to be an adjustment, is there? We're never going back to the days where pitchers try to pace themselves. I just can't even see it happening.
Yeah, I think the toothpaste is out of the bottle, so to speak. You know, I think, you know, you have there's a lot of things at play there too. It's like you now the money that these guys can make, the ability to get to arbitration and really have set themselves up for their lives and their families is based off of how hard they throw, how many strikeouts they have. What their ERA is, all these factors definitely play into it. But you're to your point, like we've gotten to a point where velocity is it's not going away from the game because that's what's marketed, that's what's being used as far as how they're being scouted, how they're being kept on the teams. So there's it was interesting, like with Boddicker, like you're saying, he paced himself, and that's something where even when I was playing, you would have if you dip down in velocity for maybe one or two innings, but you're just trying to save a little bit, they'd be like, hey, what's going on? Are you feeling okay? You know, like there's just a different aspect to it to where it's like, man, do I have to be pumping it, in the 90s every time? Or can I, and Greinke did a great job of that. Like obviously towards the end of his career, he was able to identify, I can do this and pitch the way I want to do it. But that's towards the end of his career.
I guess the thing that's tough about it though is this is all based out of analytics, figuring out what the best way to win a game is. Right. And everybody's figured out, okay, strikeouts are important. Spin rate matters a lot. Launch angle matters if you're a hitter. Plate discipline matters if you're a hitter getting on base. But what it leads to is less entertaining baseball because strikeouts are fun to watch. But when you have the ball never getting put in play because it's walks and strikeouts and home runs, you don't get to see the great defensive plays. You don't get to see action. In sports, usually, you want the ball in play. You want to see action. So, like, what leads to winning baseball is also what leads to boring baseball for fans. And also, nobody wants to watch somebody walk around the mound for 35 seconds in between pitches with the ball's not even in play. Mm-hmm. And so that's the idea behind the pitch clock is let's get this game going. Play the game. And I don't know what the solution is. I don't know, like, how do you, like, they have to find a way to make it where teams want to play the game where the ball's in play. But that's just not the best way to win, necessarily.
Right. That's a tough thing to market as well. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. The baseball is at a point where they consistently have to fight against, what's going to do, what it's best for the game to grow. But also, they're fighting with themselves between the MLBPA and the actual, MLB ownership and the management.
We've got Scott Carroll in studio talking baseball. Back after this on WHB. All right, we need to get things settled here because I get so confused sometimes. You have to understand, Scott Carroll, Liberty native, former Chicago White Sox, but played ball, star quarterback and pitcher at Liberty High School. Went to Purdue to play football. Chancellor to Missouri State. He's done it all, people. So I know we've talked about this just when they were in the tournament, but now it's different. And you have to understand, I get very confused by one of our regular guests, Gary Dieter, because he attended, I believe, 7 or 12 schools. The number escapes me.
14.
And we don't know, we never know who he's rooting for. We found out he's a hardcore Creighton fan, even though he's never set foot on campus. But he did play a year at Alabama. And so then, of course, when Creighton was out, and then Alabama made it to the Final Four, he came in here wearing his Alabama Letterman jacket. And so I know you spent some time at Purdue. But now that Purdue is in the national championship game, were you always on the bandwagon? Are you driving it now? Like, how do you feel about Purdue?
Definitely not driving it, but I'm excited to see the two best teams playing basketball. And I think this is great for college basketball and great for just us as sports fans. I would love Purdue to win tonight. I think it's going to be a tough test. I think UConn's guards are just so much more athletic than what Purdue can handle. I still think UConn handles them, but I'm hoping for a really good game.
I'm like, the Zach Edey's got a bad attitude. I like it. He's been kind of as Patrick Mahomes would be called. He's been somewhat of a competitive prick the past couple of weeks in interviews and everything else. I don't know who was interviewing him after those last game. Like, had kind of an off game there with you know, your turnovers and blah, 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 blah. And the answer is, yeah, I had 24-12, wasn't really an off game or something like that. It was really good. He has a chip on his shoulder.
He's got an edge to him right now.
Right,
he's
like
a competitive prick.
Right. The other thing I want to ask you about, I get a text from you, I get a text from him. You're at a lunch with Jake Gutierrez, and you're drinking out of a whose blue bottle was that?
That's mine.
Was that yours?
I was sharing some water with.
What's going on with this water?
Yeah, the hydrogen infused. It's great stuff.
Is it?
I don't know if you guys have tried hydrogen infused water, but Jake turned me on to it, and it's delicious.
Did he? So how did this happen? How did he turn
delicious.
You on to it?
Does it have a flavor to it?
I just want to know
it?
What's going on here.
We had coffee Chris. Together. Yeah, had yeah. coffee together, and he had bottle service at the table. You know,
I
walk in, and he's got this nice big blue bottle of water. It's like, dang, they do bottle service here too. So.
He's like a traveling salesman. Did he show you his wares? Yeah. Anything else? He tried to get you in an ice bath or what else?
Not yet. But we'll get him an ice
bath. What were the shots he had me taking every morning?
Ginger shots.
Ginger? And cayenne pepper.
Ooh,
cayenne?
He's trying to. Who else tried one on the air?
Sherm, didn't he?
Yeah. I've had one on the air.
Yeah. Steve, you want to add your name to the list?
Very close to throwing up.
I don't know if you want to, but.
Oh, Stan Weber tried one.
Are you guys in business together? What's going on here?
I think so. Yeah, we're gonna be helping Jake find a great home for him this year, and he's gonna get his feet wet in the market and see what we can do.
So he is your client.
I think so.
Sounded like a pet that needs an adoption. We find a great home for him. You know, a great place,
a forever
for him.
Home.
Yeah. Yeah.
Find a forever home for that furry animal in there. So are you going to tell people that's your client? Is that something?
Absolutely.
You're
going to we haven't promote? Been out to see houses yet because I want him to So once we start,
this is going to be fun for
yep,
you.
Yep. But
so do you at least like when you know? Is it? I know he's interviewing you. Are you interviewing him to make sure you want to dance with this devil? I mean, is this?
Yeah, we kind of went through that process already. I think we're a pretty good fit for each other. And
really,
yeah, we had a good time, and he got me hooked on the hydrogen infused water. So now I owe him some.
Any other ideas that he's trying to throw at you that you're hooked on? You know,
oh, man.
Ideas about governance.
What I found out though is that he had this knocked out before Aaron Rodgers even thought about it. But just isolating himself for he had that figured out way before Rodgers
right.
did.
Right.
You know, just going in the woods and just secluding yourself.
Right. What's the ayahuasca? Where you at? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's you told me. You know, I'm just trying to figure out what he's looking for, and I've known him 20 years, and I have no idea what he's looking for in any walk of life. But
to be unpredictable, you must first be predictable.
So this is good. So tell people, give yourself a plug there. If this guy is good enough to handle Jake and meet all his standards, then you can handle anyone. So how can people get a hold of you?
No, I appreciate it. Again, I'm a realtor here in Kansas City, licensed in both Kansas and Missouri, and I work with Van Noy Real Estate, a great brokerage here. And so would love to help anybody looking for a house in this market because it's there's a lot going on, and so you need some guidance and education whenever something like this is going on. So would love an opportunity to talk with you.
Well, let me tell you, he needs guidance.
Yeah,
if you can provide that for him, all of us a favor here. I can promise you that you want to weigh in on this. I mean, this is
Yeah, I just
better go right, or you we end up losing again.
No.
That's how confident I am. That's what I'm saying. That's how confident I am. It's going to be taken care of.
I'm confident in you, but you need to handle this the right way.
I will.
Because there's some things I feel like once you start to get the paperwork, you might have some problems here. He might offer you some unique challenges and hoops to jump through.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah, we'll get that knocked out.
That's right. We'll get it knocked out.
Sometimes there are taxes involved with buying houses. You're the expert on that, though. You tell me. I don't know.
We talked about all that. So,
how do you feel about that?
it definitely threw me for a loop, for sure.
Oh, boy. Well, I mean, there's
he threw a curveball at you, didn't he?
Yeah. It's a big curveball.
Swinging way over the top of that one.
I don't know. I don't know what to tell you about that.
Yeah. Okay.
So here's my, and again, knocking on wood. We talked about all these injuries with starting pitchers, and then we talked about how great the Royals starting pitchers have looked. This is what scares me, right? Because I mean, we had this conversation in the commercial break. One of the exciting things, the most exciting things about this Royals team is you can with a straight face say, hey, they've got a legitimate Cy Young candidate if he stays healthy in Cole Reagans. And hey, they've got a legitimate MVP candidate in Bobby Witt Jr. Not a lot of teams can say that. The Royals sure haven't been able to say that in a long time. Now, as the Angels have shown, you could have great couple great Hall of Fame players that still not make it the playoffs, so you have to have other things. Nate has pointed out MJ Melendez looks like he could be a post-hype sleeper and start to live up to what he was supposed to be. I love Mikel Garcia. We don't know about Vinny Pasquantino coming back from the shoulder surgery. That's still a question mark. But they have other things in place and going out and adding to the rotation. What do you think this team's upside is realistically this season? What could they be?
I mean, I think after this week, it'll be another good conversation to have. I think that's where we can really address to see where they just compete, because this is going to be a good barometer. Even though the Astros just record-wise this year aren't great right now.
We know they're going to be good.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know their pedigree. You know what they got. You know what kind of team they compete with. And so these two teams coming into town, and that's why, I mean, Royals fans get out there and support the boys in blue and make it a fun atmosphere these next six games. So I think it'll this could be a good test to see where they're at, because the goal is to just have a good month of April. I think, the guys, I was reading an article, the Royals players are really focused on just playing in the moment and playing it one game at a time, which is cliche, but actually if you think about it and apply that and execute it, it's really powerful, and so winning the month of April is huge. So if they can go out there and do that and compete and continue to play good baseball like they are and win the month of April, it sets you up for such a good rest of the years to where, things are very, very much achievable as far as being above 500 and competing to win this division.
Nate Bucati.
I'd love to explore the MJ Melendez thing a little deeper, because my I didn't know what to expect from him. I won't sit here and act like I predicted that he would have this great start to the season, but when we would sit there in the preseason and talk about the lineup and what do you think of the lineup, I felt pretty good about the top half of the lineup. The bottom third of the lineup didn't feel great about, and so to me, like, lengthening the lineup is really important, and Melendez to me was like the biggest X factor, because there's this upside that you see there, but he hadn't delivered on it yet.
Post-hype is real.
Yeah, so I felt like, man, if he really can, and there were some people that felt like the way he ended the season last year was an indicator that he was starting to find his footing at the major league level, but I felt like if he really can, that swings the lineup from being a really top-heavy lineup to a more balanced lineup. And you know that if he clicks, there's going to be power there, because we always saw that, right, yeah, along the way. And he's got to be a run production guy.
And doesn't it help if you find, okay, you're an outfielder now, finally.
Yeah.
This is what you are.
Yeah, we're not goofing around trying to be a catcher anymore, whatever.
Right.
And I don't ever expect him to be a plus defender out there, but you need corner outfielders that can hit and produce runs. For him to get, I feel like for some guys, it's more important than others to get off to a hot start. If you're a hitter that's had three great years in the big leagues and you get off to a cold start, it's probably easier to calm down and be like, I'm going to get it figured out, I'll be okay. But if you're MJ Melendez, how important is it for him to have the start that he's had to build that confidence that they will need from him?
Yeah, it's huge. I think he's not going to – I mean, most of the athletes and most of us that compete at that level, you're not going to be so results-oriented, like, I have to get off to a great start. But it is such a good thing when you do. Like, you're not – you wouldn't trade it, because, his confidence is great. He's seen the ball well. And like you mentioned, his power, to me, sometime is surprising. Like, the way he can take some bad pitches and park them, over the fence and do damage. So I think, the Royals, where they're at ranking right now, I think they're second or third in the big leagues in home runs, and that's with playing four games of Coffin, which is not an easy hitter's ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the ability to put the ball over the fence, and that's going to be great for the team.
So before we let you go, there's one other question I want to ask you. We had the stadium vote. I'm not going to ask you about that, but this is all – it's led to having a lot of conversations about how we feel about Coffin Stadium and the Truman Sports Complex, and the writing's on the wall. The Royals aren't going to be there much longer after a few years. And so I'm curious, you had the unique perspective of growing up in Kansas City and viewing that stadium as a hometown kid, but then getting a chance to come and play at Kauffman Stadium as the opposition. So what compared to all the other stadiums and everything else that you played in and pitched in, what was Kauffman Stadium like from an opposing player's perspective.
Yeah, playing at Kauffman, I will say it was an amazing experience. I got to do it in high school, and I got to do it as a major league professional. So it was very cool, and so I don't want to downplay at all how awesome Kauffman Stadium is, the experience there, and just what that ballpark is. So I think just, you know, yeah, not to dive into the vote, but yeah, it was a great experience and what that stadium is currently.
What was the worst stadium?
Ooh, the worst, Oakland A's.
It's just terrible.
You see they're moving to Sacramento for a little bit?
Yeah. Well, how would you feel about that?
I mean, it would be tough, but it is what it, like, you just got to strap it up and say, listen, we're just going to get our wins and get out of town, because it wouldn't be as enjoyable. And you're like, man, I'm in the big leagues and I got to go there. But, I mean, they're the ones that have to play their home games there. At least you're just, as a visiting team, just traveling and playing three or four games and getting out of town. So it would be tough.
Hey, Scott, we appreciate you coming in the studio and talking baseball with us. And, man, we wish you all the luck in the world with Jake.
I appreciate it. Hey, we're going to get it done.
Will you keep us updated on the journey?
Absolutely.
I mean, it could bring you more clients. Like, yeah. Again, like, if they look at it and say, well, he handled his issues, he could certainly handle ours, you know? This is going to be a big test for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Looking forward to it.
This is like, you know, going up against a great lineup. He's got a lot of spots he could get you. But that's Scott Carroll, former Major League pitcher. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Boy, oh boy, nothing like Coach Cal stealing the spotlight from the national championship game tonight, as the rumors were all around over the weekend, and then we find out today it's official. John Calipari going to Arkansas on a 5-year deal, leaving Kentucky, and now the Kentucky job is open, and away we go. The dominoes will fall. So I don't know. Who should Kentucky hire? It's already starting, like, you know, first Kentucky guy. I'm calling Jay Wright. Like, Jay Wright's not answering your phone. I think Jay Wright's in studio where he's great. You say call Hurley. I don't know if he answers either.
No, I'm he won't. But I mean, if you're Kentucky, you have to make these calls. You have to have people.
I think Nate Oates would be the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, what he does at a school that just doesn't care. I mean, you could say
in Arkansas, will, you know, or in Kentucky, will let him get away with what he wants to there.
Yes,
as long as he wins.
He's doing it in the SEC. Who else? Like, who would you call?
I mean, Scott Drew's definitely a name on there.
Yeah.
If I'm Scott Drew, I don't think I'd go. I think I can win at Baylor and not deal with all the crap I have to deal with at Kentucky. Why would I go? But I'd at least call him if I was him.
And how about this? Arkansas going after Coach Cal because Chris Beard and Jerome Tang turned him down. Because for a while there were some nervous times when Chris Beard was off the list and it was all eyes on Jerome Tang in Arkansas.
Not for very long either. But it was there for a minute. It's good for K-State.
Yeah, really good.
Well done.
Throw another name out there. It's a time for speculation.
How about Otzelberger?
No, you're going to piss off these Iowa State fans, aren't you?
Well, wouldn't you be interested?
Sure.
Pretty damn good coach.
Mark Pope, but that won't tickle their fancy. Who else?
Bruce Pearl, I think,
Yeah. He'd be ready to scream at some people there.
Yeah, he would.
He'd be a great fit there.
Just him versus the fan base would be fantastic.
He seems like he would fit, though, like culturally, everything.
No more hot choices?
Bring Patino back.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
One Kentucky guy just posted said, there is only one choice, and it's a picture of Bob Huggins. So,
well, that would be an interesting one.
Huh?
I hope Bob Huggins is doing all right. Still out there collecting recycled beer cans and trash bags.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Gone, Bob Huggins.
Unnecessary? We will take a break when we come back. Jared Sutton breaks down the WrestleMania Night 2 main event. Who was the best? Who had the best appearance last night? Jake will tell you after this on WHB.